This is ESPN Radio.
Welcome to hour number three at the Arm Barn, also known as Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests will join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And the Arm Barn's an exclusive club around here. Right? We don't just let anybody into this spot. And so as we sit around and come up with the rest of the show here, that's why we'll have guests like Mina Kimes join us in about a half hour here. I've always said Mina Kimes, honorary offensive lineman, in addition to being an NFL analyst around. Yet, Chris, you probably didn't know that here, is that Mina, very big O-line tendencies overall, despite the stature. So she's part of the club.
She's real scrappy with it, huh?
Very scrappy. We can count on her.
She doesn't seem like the type of offensive lineman that's just going to overwhelm you with brute strength. It's just kind of one of those Dan Campbell kneecap biter types.
Yes. Cerebral, biter of kneecaps here. Big-time technician, knows the playbook top to bottom. So we'll talk to Mina in about a half hour here. But Tyler Foljam, our ESPN sports betting analyst, joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline. Tyler, would you say you got what it takes to be a part of the Arm Barn?
I actually agree with what your sentiments are concerning changing the name from Bullpen to Arm Barn. I know we're not going to see eye to eye when it comes to candy corn. Thank goodness the Halloween holiday is over. But, you know, and go look, we are in lockstep here, and Arm Barn is a tremendous name with tremendous marketing potential and branding potential. And I think I got what it takes to loosen my arm up inside the Arm Barn.
All right, there we go. Tyler Foljam officially in the Arm Barn now. We're recruiting right now. The doors are still open, and Tyler is going to be here with us. All right, Tyler, we got a lot to get to heading into Monday Night Football tonight, but wanted to start with the injury news here. Derrick Henry going to be out for a substantial amount of time. We don't know how much yet here, but their Week 9 matchup, Los Angeles opened at Caesars Sportsbook with L.A. giving 4 points. Since news of Derrick Henry being out with that injury, the lines moved to Los Angeles -7.5 here. Are you surprised Derrick Henry was worth a full 3.5 points?
Oh, a little bit. That's shocking in the modern NFL that a running back, even one as great and dynamic and as valuable as Derrick Henry, is worth 3.5 points. I think that might be a slight over-exaggeration or overcorrection in the market. So given that, I'm inclined, even as I sit here wearing my Aaron Donald throwback 99 Rams jersey, as a Rams fan, card-carrying member, the only one who is from St. Louis but stuck around when Stan Kroenke ripped the team from my home city and moved them to L.A. for considerable profits. That might be coming back to bite him in the butt. But, I think there's an overreaction slightly at 3.5 to Derrick Henry, as great and valuable as he is. We know running back is the most replaceable position in football, even someone as great as Derrick Henry. You're not going to get another Derrick Henry, but you can still get 85-90% of the production if you block as well, scheme as well, and have guys like A.J. Brown and Julio Jones making plays on the perimeter. So 7.5, I'll probably stay away from that side, even though I am a Rams fan. I'll just bet the over here. It's massive. It's at 54, I think. But both Tennessee and the Rams are over teams this year. The Rams are 5-2-1 to the over. The Tennessee's 5-3. And that, of course, continues a, you know, 2-year-plus trend. Ryan Tannehill has been an absolute over machine since he's taken over as the starting quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. That has continued this year. And now with Matthew Stafford quarterbacking Sean McVay's offense instead of Jared Goff, the Rams are now an offense that puts up 30 points any given Sunday. So I'll probably attack the over there, even though it's high at 54. I think it is a primetime game where we will see some fireworks despite Henry missing from the Titans lineup.
Tyler, as a Rams fan, I know you got to be excited about the trade they made earlier today, bringing over Von Miller. But as a Giants fan, I'm looking forward to what's going on tonight. And I wanted to know, with the Kansas City Chiefs as 10.5-point favorites, which side of the line do you like in this particular matchup?
Canty, you guessed very correctly that I'm very excited about Von Miller joining AD, Leonard Floyd, and Jalen Ramsey. As far as tonight, thankfully for Daniel Jones, he's going up against a defense that's probably exactly on the opposite end of the defensive spectrum as the LA Rams right now. That's the Kansas City Chiefs. So I like your Giants, Max Kellerman's Giants, getting 10.5. That hook is a big number there. Although Kansas City has been disappointing, I think they'll score points in this game. I think they're going to come back from the embarrassment that was the 3-point effort against the Tennessee Titans when they had Derrick Henry a week ago. And even though the game is at Arrowhead, where it can be cold on a November night, and that can be a very, very loud atmosphere, We know the Chiefs' defense is as accommodating as any defense in at any level of football that we've watched. So with Kadarius Toney being available, Sterling Shepard being available, even with no Saquon Barkley or Kenny Galladay, I'll take the 10.5-point head start with Daniel Jones. I think he can put some points on the board. I also think this is an over game because I think the Chiefs are going to rebound with some vigor on their on the offensive side of the ball. Tyreek Hill's had a few extra days to get his quad right for the Monday night game. So I'm expecting there to be points, but with it going over the total of 52, I think the Giants keep it close, and we see like a 34-27 type of game in favor of the Chiefs. But that's a win in Vegas for Giants-Packers.
Tyler Foljam, our ESPN sports betting analyst, making a lot of Giants fans on our set very happy here on Canty and Golic Jr. That's our Monday Night Football preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs. For protection on the road and on the water, see how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. I want to stay in the NFC East, though, Tyler, because a few weeks ago on this show, we asked you if the Dallas Cowboys had become a must-bet team. Weren't quite ready to go there yet. They are now 7-0 against the spread this season. So, doubling down here. Are they finally at must-bet territory, even the Cooper Rush-led Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, I mean, I subscribe wholeheartedly to the old adage that good teams win, great teams cover. Yes, your straight-up record is all that matters in the grand scheme of things. But if you truly want to be a great team, an awesome, all-time historic, potentially championship Super Bowl team, don't just beat teams, beat the expectation in which you're supposed to beat teams. And the Dallas Cowboys have done nothing but that all year long. Not only do they only have a one in the loss column, which is tied with a few other handful of teams for fewest in the NFL, but they are the only team with a zero in the ATS loss column. So, gentlemen, I tell you, the greatest team right now, the number one team in my power rankings, not my Rams, even adding Von Miller, not those Cardinals or those Packers that have won 6-7 straight, it is the Dallas Cowboys because they are the only team that is 7-0 ATS this season. Until they prove otherwise with an ATS loss, I have to subscribe to my theory that the greatest team right now in the NFL is the Dallas Cowboys. So I'll keep betting them ATS. Even though I passed last night because there was no Dak Prescott, I bet the under thinking there'd be no Dak Prescott, and that was not a sweat at all. What a wildly impressive way for Dallas to move to 7-0 on the road, hostile environment, backup quarterback. Everyone else raised their level of play. Cooper Rush showed up. What that shows me, Canty Golic, is this team is not just Dak Prescott. It's a well-coached team. It's a deep team. There is talent at all levels of both sides of the ball. So that's why I think they and I'm not trying to be facetious. I hate Cowboys fans. They're the most annoying, obnoxious fan base in the NFL. But I have to give props where props are due. They are the greatest team in the NFL right now to this juncture of the season because they're 7-0 ATS with just one straight-up loss.
Tyler, Cowboys aside, what was the most impressive or the most shocking thing that you stood out for you from a betting standpoint in Week 8?
Well, I think for a lot of people, it was the fact that the Cincinnati Bengals were such a popular eliminator or survivor pick. And how'd that work out? Not so well, Bob. the Cincinnati Bengals may have, I don't know if they were just reading their own press clippings or, you know, if we were giving them a little bit too much credit or if it's just the classic young team figuring out that, hey, this is hard for 17 weeks in the NFL. You can't take it easy against anyone like New York Jets. That was certainly surprising. I'll go back to my Rams as well. Canty Golic, they had a 38-0 lead. And they were laying 16.5 points going into the fourth quarter. Then all of a sudden, the backups, see, this is where I give Dallas credit. The Rams backups come in against an awful Texans team and allow them to score 22 points unanswered in the fourth quarter to get a backdoor cover by a hook. That's not great. That's merely good, winning 38-22 against Houston. To be great, they needed an extra point or to hold Tennessee, or the Texans, pardon me, to one less point. So that was disappointing to me, and I'm sure to a lot of Rams fans, or Rams backers who laid the 16.5 and turned the game off in the fourth quarter when it's 38-0, only to realize they didn't get any money in their account because the Texans scored 22 unanswered to get the backdoor cover. So those are probably the two that stand out to me. The Bengals loss for survivor and eliminator pools and that backdoor cover by the Texans.
Damn David Culley in that two-point conversion. Damn him.
Damn. That is the world of betting, and that is why we turn to Tyler Foljam, our ESPN sports betting analyst. Check him out on the Daily Wager. Check him out here on the weekends on ESPN Radio. Tyler, always great, man. We'll talk to you next week, brother.
Sounds good.
Awesome stuff, as always. Check him out at Tyler_Foljam on Twitter. Coming up next, though, somebody out there had words for our guy, Chris Canty. We don't take that lightly around here at Canty and Golic Jr. So coming up next, we'll address the issues, we'll resolve the beef, and we'll let Chris rebut here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
We got to update the sign in the facility right now. Days since Russell Wilson did something publicly embarrassing, zero. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We will talk to ESPN NFL analyst and noted Seahawks fan Mina Kimes about why Russ continues to be so freaking weird in public, man. Like, just stop. You're so good at football. You're so good at so many things. Why are you so uncomfortable sometimes?
I feel like he's just trying sometimes, trying too hard sometimes, man. That's what it comes down to, Gojo. Like, he wants to be liked by everybody. He wants to be revered, respected. And I get it. But sometimes he does things that just seem, I don't know, man, out of character, or seem like he's, you know, doing too much. And I feel like this latest incident that you just described is exactly that.
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems too in character sometimes. Like, this comes way too... Either way, we got to address some issues with Russell Wilson, with Mina Kimes coming up in a little bit. We'll get to that. But first, we got to address some stuff going on with the morning show right now. So,
yeah,
this, let me lay out the situation for you guys here. So, not too long ago, Keyshawn Johnson, co-host Keyshawn J. Will and Max on ESPN Radio from 6 to 10, came out and made the claim that he believed the New Orleans Saints were a top three team in the NFC. Obviously, we thought that was ridiculous, and we said as much on this show here. Apparently, word got back to Keyshawn that that was something that we had said. So I haven't heard this yet, but apparently, this is the response that we got. Keyshawn Johnson clapping back at the notion, really, I mean, the help we were trying to give him, that the Saints aren't a top three team in the NFC. Let's see what he had to say this morning.
There are levels to this. There are certainly levels to it, Christopher Canty of Canty and Golic. There are levels to this. And the levels is, right now, I don't want to do an ESPN on ESPN crime. But
you're about to.
My good ex-teammate in Christopher Canty, this is why I tell you, you must listen to me before you do your hot takes. You have to listen, okay? You said they haven't beaten anybody. Well, they just beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then you say that the Green Bay Packers were in preseason mode. Well, what the hell was Tampa Bay in midseason form? I mean, like, there are levels to this. Don't look at Jameis Winston and form an opinion based on that prior to his injury on what this team could potentially be. You know football, Chris. Don't get caught up in sports talk radio. Don't get caught up in that.
Worried about ESPN on ESPN crime. Chris, this is a misdemeanor. Keyshawn's getting off with a slap on the wrist on this one. Like, he might have gotten in trouble for stealing some Skittles from the calf at ESPN based on that.
Yeah, I don't know why they played the Ether music to that, because that was weak sauce from Keyshawn. Like, if you were going to come with something, you should have come with something a little more substantial, something a little more hard. But that right there was a little soft, man. I don't know why Keyshawn thinks that was a clapback. I don't even know, like, how you can even get up there on national programming and sit there and do something so weak as that. But let me address the issue at hand, first of all. When it comes to the New Orleans Saints, when it comes to why I didn't feel like they were a top three seed in the NFC, maybe it's because I saw them get blasted early in the season by the Carolina Panthers. Or maybe it's because I saw them lose to my New York Football Giants at home. Maybe those might be two reasons why I thought that the Saints could be a little bit suspect, why I wasn't buying into Jameis Winston. Now, I'll give credit where credit is due. That New Orleans defense is a lot better than I thought it was, especially with the performance that they put on yesterday. But let's not also lose track of this. When Trevor Siemian came in the game, all of the scoring drives that the New Orleans Saints had, they were either assisted by Bucs penalties or by Bucs turnovers. So if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers don't play a sloppy football game, you're probably talking about a different outcome. But that's an if, and I understand that. But I also get that this is a long regular season. There are 17 games, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, what do they have left? They got 9 left. So we'll see how this all shakes out. But right now, as it stands, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are still the number one team in the NFC South, and I think it's going to stay that way. And I still don't think the New Orleans Saints are a top three seed in the NFC. Maybe I'm wrong, But I don't think so. But based on Keyshawn Johnson's logic, if you win the head-to-head matchup, then that team is all of a sudden better than the team that they beat. If we were doing that, then I guess the New York Jets are better than the Cincinnati Bengals or the Tennessee Titans. Or I guess the New York Giants are better than New Orleans. Or maybe the Carolina Panthers are better than New Orleans. But that's ridiculous. That's not the NFL. We know how this goes on any given Sunday. Keyshawn Johnson, you've been around long enough to understand that. So why don't you use your brain and your football acumen, your football IQ, and know better when it comes to having these types of conversations?
Yeah!
Yes. Let me tell you what. Chris Canty's being kind right there. He might be wrong. Then again.
Never say never, but never.
Not on this one. Not now, not no way, not no how, Chris. I'm sorry. Thank you for trying to help him out here. I mean, honestly, Keyshawn, he mentioned listening. Like, Chris Canty is trying to help you out right now. He really is. So hopefully, it sounds like they've already reached out, by the way. Apparently, they want to get this real and put this on wax. Chris Canty will be joining the guys on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max tomorrow morning, 9:30 Eastern, Chris? Is that where we're
looking at? 9:30 Eastern. I think that's what we settled on. So we'll have more of this back and forth a little bit. Hopefully, I can set Keyshawn Johnson straight. But, I mean, the next time that you're going to go in, man, I mean, you got to go in. You can't be soft like Keyshawn was.
Honestly, man. No football player
wants to be soft, right? I mean, Keyshawn's clapback was SOF capital T, soft.
I was going to say, man, he's been hanging out with those basketball guys in the morning too much. That was a basketball fight.
Yeah, maybe they can help him figure out how to pronounce Tannehill.
Yes!
Maybe. What'd I say?
Oh, no! Tannehill! Oh, okay. I'm going to try and collect myself here because that was a football fight that just happened on air. You can keep all that basketball stuff in the morning. That was a football fight that we just had go down here on Canty and Golic Jr. Coming up next, speaking of football fight, we mentioned honorary offensive lineman Mina Kimes going to join us here in a second to try and grade the trade for Von Miller heading to the Los Angeles Rams and figure out what the hell Russell Wilson's talking about on Twitter. We'll get to all of that after this word from Wendy's. Whew! I need to cool down right now. Man, you know what I need right now? Wendy's breakfast, Sammy. Let me tell you. Right now, Wendy's. You can see what all the hype is about here with the new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. Ooh, we're going fries today. I didn't even know. We're talking real, natural-cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy. Down to the last fry. There is no fry left unturned. Down to the last fry, or we'll replace them. These aren't just your typical fries that you add to a meal. These are fries worth adding a meal to. Chew on that one for a second. Abandon the cold, old, and soggy and head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy at participating U.S. Wendy's. Back with Mina Kimes next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Coming up in about 10 minutes. Not since 2017's postseason have we seen a time for backup quarterbacks quite like we saw this season. We'll get to the best of it that we saw this weekend. But first, we got to head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to our friend and ESPN NFL analyst, Mina Kimes. You can see her on NFL Live every day, 4 Eastern on ESPN. You can also download the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And Mina, before we get to anything Von Miller related nor normal like that, I have to ask you, have you seen Russell Wilson's tweet?
I just saw the pin. Did he pin it? That would be very meta of him if he pinned the pin.
Wow.
The Seahawks also quote tweeted it, which feels like a retweet is endorsement kind of moment. And suggests, like, I don't want to read too much into it, that our guy might be back.
That is exciting, Mina. The tweet, no more pin, time to win. Is that the most Russell Wilson way to announce this possible?
I think pairing it with a t-shirt release might be a little bit more brand. Listen, man, if he beats the Packers, I'll get no more pin, time to win on a t-shirt. I'll make it myself, custom.
All right, you guys heard it right there. Clip that and save it. Mina Kimes getting ready to make the shirts if they can go out and get it done against the Packers. But speaking of great quarterbacks in the NFC, Mina, that prompted one major move. We saw Von Miller, the blockbuster trade, sending the pass rusher from the Denver Broncos to the Rams. When you saw this news, I know you thought this was a direct response to a lot of the signal callers and throwers we've seen in the NFC, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to see tonight on Monday Night Football a style of defense that's been kind of proliferating against certain quarterbacks, explosive quarterbacks and offenses in the NFL, which is more of this too high safety, you know, shell coverage, not a lot of blitzing. In fact, I'd be surprised if they blitz Mahomes at all. And the Rams know that. The Rams have a very good defense. They right now are able to get pressure with the best of them, but I think they're all too aware that come playoff time, they're going to have to play the likes of Kyler Murray, who you simply cannot blitz. And I think they would like to have the option to blitz less. And, you know, Von Miller, Aaron Donald, and Leonard Floyd, well, that's a good way to blitz less.
Mina, it seems like Derrick Henry's going to be out for the rest of the season. Can you put into words how big a loss that is for this Tennessee team?
It's enormous. I mean, gosh, you know, the Ryan Tannehill-Derrick Henry relationship is funny because I've always felt that they really both benefit from each other. And when that offense is clicking, when the play-action pass is working, and Tannehill's just a great play-action quarterback, which isn't an insult, by the way. Sometimes people take that as an insult. It's not. He's deadly accurate, especially throwing over the middle of the field. And of course, having A.J. Brown and Julio Jones helps as well. But he's made Henry better, and then Henry has made him better. So to take him out of that offense, you know, defenses are certainly going to commit fewer resources to stopping the run, and we'll see how that affects the passing attack. But I was said on live today, you know, if I'm the Titans, you really don't want to change your approach on offense too much because it's what serves not just your quarterback best, but also your wide receivers and your offensive line.
Ken Ingle Jr. talking to Mina Kimes here. Mina, we hear all the time about the relationship between running the football and competent play-action passing, or lack thereof, according to what the numbers tell us here. Is there reason to believe, though, that Derrick Henry's kind of the exception in the way the Titans have operated?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was watching the Titans yesterday, and the third drive, when they were down 14-0, they succeeded. They scored on the drive. Really with a heavy dose of the play action pass and, you know, some Henry mixed in, you had a Tannehill zone read. All the throws, by the way, were to tight ends. And I was kind of watching the defenders just to watch them on those play action passes. And you do see them, of course, flowing to stop Henry. But without the negative, you know, without the control, without knowing what it looks like when he's on the off the field, it's hard to say because there are also offenses with much less efficient run games who are very good at play action. Right now, the best play action quarterback statistically in the NFL is Matt Ryan. Hardly a rushing attack comparable to Derrick Henry. So, again, it's kind of one of those things where we won't know until we see it. But you do think, I mean, you know absolutely that this makes defenses' lives a lot easier.
Mina, we got word out of New Orleans that Jameis Winston is going to be done for the season. Even with him missing the majority of yesterday's game, the Saints were able to get the win over the Bucs, the defending champs. What's the outlook on this New Orleans team moving forward? Where do you expect to see them once the regular season is over?
I think that because the defense, there are very few great defenses in the NFL right now. It's kind of interesting. Like, it's really, really hard to even do a top five. The Saints, undeniably, in my mind, belong there. And obviously you saw that versus Tampa. They are they're built in a way, I think, that is designed to give Tom Brady fits because they really don't have to blitz very much to get pressure. They have linebackers who can cover really, really well. And then they have those corners who can play that sticky man coverage. They play a lot of two-man, right? And that, to me, puts them in any football game. I don't care who they're playing, the Bucs or whoever. However, the limitations that they have on offense because of the lack of a explosive passing attack whether it's Simeon or Taysom or whoever, it puts a cap on this team in a crowded NFC. So could they be a playoff team? Sure. But do I see them going farther? Not really.
Mina, speaking of crowded NFC, did the Dallas Cowboys have the biggest statement win of the weekend? Is that the best team in football?
I have them after the Rams right now, which goes back to kind of our discussion about the trade. I just think the Rams have played such bad teams outside of the, you know, the Arizona game that I think people are kind of ignoring them at the moment, and that's fair. But the offense really looks like it's clicking on all cylinders. I think their weakness is run defense, and I also think that probably won't matter.
Mina, we got to ask you about the upset of the week. That was what happened in MetLife Stadium with the Jets taking care of business against the Cincinnati Bengals. Are we changing how we're looking at this Cincinnati team, or are we still looking at them as contenders in the AFC North?
I'm kind of changing how I look at them. To me, what really jumped out in this game, the offense was fine. There was a few disastrous things. Mike and I were talking about the failed screen where Joe Burrow got his pass tipped and then intercepted. But I was really disappointed what I saw from the Bengals defense, because as much as we love the legend of Mike White, it really should be the legend of his running backs and receivers getting yards after the catch against a Bengals defense that was playing them so soft and just, you know, missing tackles right and left. And, you know, the kind of premise of the Bengals as a competitor to me were the combination of Burrow and Chase, and then on the other side, just a really sound, solid defense. And they looked like anything but, and that's to me concerning if we're trying to talk about them as an actual contender.
A definite crack in the foundation in an AFC that is as cluttered and, as Mina called it the last time she was on our show, as much of an amoeba as has been the entire season. So we'll have plenty more time to try and figure that out. Mina, always great talking to you. We'll talk to you next week, all right?
Bye, guys.
Check her out on NFL Live. Download, subscribe, rate, and review the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcast. Coming up next, whether it is the legend of Mike White or the Red Rush of Cooper in Dallas. We had a big weekend for backup quarterbacks. Let's try and figure out how much of it's actually going to stick around heading into the remainder of the season. Next on ESPN Radio. Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Candy. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Always took Chris Candy for a big boy band guy.
Not so much. Not quite. Catchy tune. Just not my speed.
And you know what? To each their own here.
There you go.
Surprise absolutely no one that this was that a heavy rotation in my young childhood here. So. Certainly no one stunned by that news. If you are, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 here. So while I bask in the glory of everything that is Backstreet Boys here, we want to bask in the glory of some guys that rarely get to shine here. Because, Chris, some of my favorite people alive are backup quarterbacks. They have mastered the art of doing very little, oftentimes for a ton of money.
Yeah, that's good. It's good work if you can find it now. Let me tell you, backup quarterback, that's good living in the NFL.
But every once in a while, they actually get pressed into duty. And we had a bunch of that this weekend. Like, I want to say, not since the 2017 NFL season, where we saw three, I believe, backup quarterbacks find their way into championship weekend in the playoffs, including Nick Foles obviously win the damn thing with the Philadelphia Eagles. Not since then have we seen a weekend for backup quarterbacks quite like the one that we just saw. Because for anyone that missed it, Geno Smith and the Seahawks bounced back and got an absolute bulldozer of a win as they await Russell Wilson, who just posted about the pin coming out of his thumb on Twitter in a weird way. You had Cooper Rush go out and throw for monster yards, including a go-ahead touchdown in the last minute of the game, the first Cowboys quarterback to do that since 2015, that being Tony Romo. And then we had the legend of Mike White growing with the New York Jets here. Over 400 yards in his debut, the only quarterback besides Cam Newton to do that since 1950 in the league. And then to throw on top of that, we had Trevor Siemian step in for the New Orleans Saints. Chris, a banner weekend for the backup guys.
No question about it. But I guess my question that I would have to ask you is, which win was more impressive for you? Because to me, it comes down to the two quarterbacks, Cooper Rush or Trevor Siemian, and I would probably give the slight edge to Cooper Rush just because that was a game that it was clear that people within the Cowboys organization had no expectation of being able to win, and yet they found themselves on the winning side of it. Thanks, in large part to what Cooper Rush was able to do at the end of that game with that last touchdown drive.
Yeah, this was Cooper Rush after the game talking about that final touchdown drive. Take a listen to another redheaded backup quarterback in Dallas doing big things.
Yeah, we just got started. You know, kind of got lucky. Coop made a tip catch on a bad ball. Got lucky to get it going, but you know, we took advantage of it once we were down there. Kind of started getting backed up. Maybe missed a thing here or there. And Zeke play on third down. We had the field goal secured. You know, kind of felt some rush. Get this check down, and he made an unbelievable play. And then Kel called the play we wanted him to call in that situation. We knew we had a good matchup, and Coop did the rest.
You know what, Chris? I'd be tempted, if you're going to give me those two quarterbacks, I would go with Cooper Rush, too, because I think there's a difference. I always felt, and I don't know how you feel about this, my first meaningful game action in college came when somebody got injured. I was thrust into a game after a starter went down here, and so you don't have time to think about things when that stuff comes up here. You just go out, you've been dialed into the game plan all week, and you do your best with that, just read and react here. Cooper Rush had to sit around and think about this thing, preparing all week, not sure if Dak was going to go or not, and then finding out before the game. Trevor Siemian got that sprung on him in real time. So it was just, hey, man, you're at home, go out there, do the damn thing and get it done. Cooper Rush had to sit with that for a lot longer and think about it.
No question about it. And then you start talking about the moment in the gravity of that situation that he was in at the end of the game and being able to make the requisite plays that it took, including that big ball that he threw to Amari Cooper, where Coop makes a circus catch, and then checking it down to Ezekiel Elliott and Zeke making him right by being able to split those two defenders and convert for a first down, and then the go-ahead score, the touchdown throw to Coop at the end to ice it all off. Like, he had to make plays in that final drive under those circumstances. That's not a situation that Trevor Siemian was in large part, thanks to the defense that the New Orleans Saints is marching out there. Not to say that the Cowboys defense didn't step up in a big way yesterday, but I think we saw Cooper Rush having to make more plays for his team to win than Trevor Siemian did.
I agree. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. I think he wins there. But if I'm looking at one performance for the weekend, Chris, it's probably got to be White Mike for the Jets, right? Mm. Like, Mike White went into this game, and we mentioned, tossed for over 400 yards. Most of it was low and slow near the line of scrimmage, and his receivers and running backs did a great job with that. But he was going up against a team that was newly minted, as, you know, if we had ended the season last week, would have been the one seed in the AFC. Everyone was high on the Bengals. And this guy went out here and got this thing done. I mean, Chris, I didn't know anything about Mike White going into this, and I watch a lot of college football. He looks like a guy that would have been cast as the quarterback in a movie about high school that only very recently features a little bit of actual on-field football play here. And he went out and somehow held it down.
No, Mike White did his thing, and the part that's probably the most impressive to me is him being able to overcome the early mistakes, right? I mean, he has that amazing start where he marches the Jets down the field for their first quarter points of the entire season and then proceeds to throw back-to-back interceptions on tip passes at the line of scrimmage. But just being able to have the mental toughness to bounce back, you even saw him get knocked around in the second half, went out, had to go under the blue tent to check and see if he had a concussion, came back out, and still balled at the end of the game. Being down 11 points with less than 5 minutes left and then being able to make the plays to lead his team on the victory, including being able to catch the two-point conversion on Philly Special. So, I mean, you learned a lot about Mike White's character in that one. And from a, you know, an execution standpoint, he just took the throws that were there for him. He had 20 targets between Ty Johnson and Michael Carter, his two running backs, and he ended up resulting in 14 catches. And so I just look at that as a lesson to be learned for Jets quarterbacks moving forward, period. You never go broke taking a profit. It was clear that Mike White understood that, and that's why the Jets were able to win that game yesterday.
And that's why Robert Saleh, their head coach, left the door open for Mike White to still be the starter even when Zach Wilson comes back. I'll believe it when I see it. Coming up next, though, are the Kansas City Chiefs really about to break our hearts again on Monday Night Football? Next.